Welcome to the Yacht Law Podcast, the program that answers your legal questions about buying, selling, and owning super yachts, working aboard them, and more. Your hosts, maritime attorney Michael Moore and yachting journalist Diane Byrne, are here to help you better navigate the luxury yachting lifestyle. While we discuss legal issues, this is not intended as legal advice or a substitute for the personalized advice of your own attorney. Consider the Yacht Law Podcast as a starting point to educate yourself about the super yacht world.
Welcome, everyone. Michael, good to see you again.
Thank you, Diane. Good to be here.
You know, since you are full-time in Florida, you, I say, are pretty lucky because the cruising season for you never ends. But for people like me who are splitting their time between Florida and the Northeast, I was thinking a lot about this this week because we have to take whatever days we get. The weather has been horrific lately. It's been a really terrible start to the summer. So the other day I was pretty excited because the weather broke just in time for me to take advantage, sort of, of one of those days in New York City. The weather wasn't entirely cooperative, so we didn't really get to go cruising, but at the very least I was on a yacht, which made me quite happy. It was a 38-meter Enterprise from Balietto. And Balietto and Burgess had actually invited a bunch of us journalists to come see the boat since she's starting to charter. So I was thinking a lot about cruising and these opportunities that we get in our industry. And it also made me think about our topic today because coincidentally, the marina where Enterprise was earlier this week is North Cove, North Cove Marina, which is operated by IGY. And IGY Marinas is one of a few yachting companies that have undergone an acquisition in recent years. So it was an interesting tie-in, I thought, to our discussion today. These mergers and acquisitions certainly have gotten a lot of attention within yachting and attention outside of yachting because of some of the companies that are involved. So I thought it would be a good opportunity for us to talk about what these acquisitions and the resulting consolidation means and doesn't mean, because there are certainly a lot of questions and there's some concern on the part of some people, which I don't know is entirely warranted. I think there are also actually some very good opportunities. But from your experience in the industry, it might be very interesting to hear your perspective and some advice maybe that people can use to weigh the pros and cons when it comes to dealing with these companies that are being acquired.
Right. I think that it's something that it's amazing how the yacht world, I don't believe it's like anything in the world other than the nature of it, of the business. Now, you mentioned, for example, two locations, North, South, Florida, the Northeast, enjoying the wonderful world of yachting, getting out on the water. And so what I think about in terms of sort of the entire, you know, looking at the entire, I mean, obviously for a law firm, the phone rings and you deal with it. And, but you can't escape that it just seems like yesterday that IGY was talking about 13 countries and 23 marinas. And they were very proud of that fact. And they had wonderful locations. And of course, it seemed, at least in my experience, wonderful people running those locations. So, you know, life was good for IGY. And I've had the pleasure of representing them on certain some of their locations. It's usually by location. And then suddenly, you know, you read that they've been acquired by Marine Max for the princely sum of $480 million. So it's kind of like an unsettling thing. You know, your world is sort of unsettled, and you really start to wonder what that means. You know, these mergers, these acquisitions, they come in so many forms. We hear a number like 480 million, you're caused to think, you know, in what form was that money paid? I can tell you that the vast majority of these things are paid in stock. And the stock is driven by someone at the top who has access to the capital markets. And I don't want to get too deep into, who benefits, in the sense, if you went online and looked up the publicly traded companies that own Marine Max, or the publicly traded companies that own Safe Harbor, or some of the other names that have been in the industry in terms of mergers and acquisitions, you can draw your own conclusions as to the stock value, as to how you convert your $480 million to stock, and vice versa. Are you even allowed to sell, for example, the wonderful paper payout that you received for a period of years? And then, of course, if it doesn't go. But I mean, it's something that you think about when a great name like, these are not 200-year-old companies, but in the case of Northrop & Johnson, for example, the brokerage firm that was acquired by Marine Max, it wasn't that long ago that happened. I think it was 2020. And, how does Marine Max acquire a brokerage house, and for what purpose, particularly when the next thing you read is that they've also acquired Frazier's, another great name. And the question is, who benefits? But I think that, I think the answer is we shall see. I think it was Xiaowen Lau who said it's too early to tell, when asked about the effect of something that had happened in China 100 years ago. He said, it's too early to tell.
Right.
The effect of that.
These, all of these acquisitions, the ones you just mentioned, the acquisition of IGY Marinas, the acquisition of Northrop & Johnson, Frazier Yachts, all coincidentally or perhaps not coincidentally by Marine Max. Then you look at Safe Harbor having acquired Savannah Yacht Center just a few months ago. In over the past year or two prior, it was Newport Shipyard, Lauderdale Marine Center, and Rybovich. Mm-hmm. Each one of those companies, brokerage house, marina manager and operator, marina shipyard, et cetera, mm-hmm. each one was a really good business.
Right.
Really good at doing exactly what mm-hmm. they do. So from a business standpoint, it's very easy to see why each one of them was such an attractive acquisition prospect. Mm-hmm. And from a standpoint of a business owner myself, I get it. Also, having been through the acquisition process as an employee, I worked for Power and Motor Yacht Magazine mm-hmm. for 16 years. And in those 16 years, we were sold three times. Which is, that can certainly sound unnerving. And the first time it happened, I was very young in my career and I thought, oh my God, what does this mean? But it, at the end of the day, it was, we were part of a package of magazines. We were extremely profitable. As a matter of fact, we were the most profitable magazine out of the dozens that were part of the package. The parent company that owned us at the time had created a consumer division and decided they didn't want to be in consumer media anymore. They wanted to stick with their business-to-business titles. That's why they sold us.
Right.
They sold us for a very tidy profit to another company. Mm-hmm. That company, in turn, sold us a few years later to another one, and so on and so on. So that's how it went. So from that standpoint, I also understand why each one of these properties was very attractive. What surprised me, though, in our industry was how it seemed that at least the impression that I got from some people in the industry and apparently some crew and some owners also were concerned. They thought, okay, that's it. This wonderful family-run shipyard is never going to be the same. This wonderful group of marinas is never going to be the same. And all I could think was, how can you make that assumption? It's really, like you were just saying, the quote from Chairman Mao, you don't know. Really, it's a wait and see. You can't automatically say, oh my God, Chicken Little, the sky is falling.
Exactly.
And neither, frankly, can you say, oh, everything's going to be great because look how much money they have to mm-hmm. invest. You just don't know. Mm-hmm. So I found it very interesting that there was such a negative, almost knee-jerk reaction right away. And I wonder if that has to do with the human resistance to change. Mm-hmm. If it's just that fear of change that was right. driving people. What do you think?
No, I think it's one of these things that the change is, I mean, I've been through this kind of phase when everyone sort of seems to get the same idea at the same time. And then you have this, as you say, a knee-jerk reaction to change itself. But I think that I will say this as a very wise man once said to me that when a law firm was in the paper for acquiring another law firm, and which seems to be the thing in what's called now big law, he said, "Michael, do you know what you get when you combine 8 mediocre law firms?" And I said, into one law firm? He says, "Yeah." And I said, "What?" He says, "A monumentally mediocre law firm."
Yeah.
And I thought that absolutely. Was just an interesting way for this at that time, older gentleman, to say to me, I wouldn't put too much stock in it. Okay. I think that the problem and the thing, some of the discussion, I think maybe this is a conversation that, sort of is a word to the industry. And it's not just the American side of things that we've talked about with Safe Harbor just being on an absolute tear. I recall, I think I'm correct about this, that Safe Harbor is what is called a blank check company. That is actually a company that has access to the capital markets, but when it starts, it has no real reason for being. It's just a blank check. And so as a result, you end up with, you know, do they really have a game plan for where they're going? Well, I think we can all agree that Safe Harbor seems to have locked into a space that is, you know, boatyards, the ones you mentioned, very fine boatyards, Rybovich, Lauderdale Marine Center, Newport Shipyard, then Savannah. So those are the 4, and I'm sure there are others in their network. Not unlike, by the way, Monaco Marine, which has 9 boatyards on the Mediterranean. And here again, I believe Monaco Marine is actually a company that comes out of California.
Interesting.
Monaco at all. It's just some people in California that had an idea. So I think that, you know, and then you get into the benefit. I mean, who benefits? What is the benefit of combining? And I'm sure there's management at the top trying their best to decide how do you deal with the strong brand of Frazier's versus the strong brand of Northrop & Johnson, and somehow combine that with a strong brand of Marine Max. You know, at one time had 52 or 62 stores, which I thought was remarkable, and that was before it started this move into some other areas. I do recall Marine Max trying to get into the large yacht market. And frankly, my impression was that wasn't really going so well for them. They were still kind of in that, you know, that market. That is I think the principal part of yachting, if you call yachting 50-foot boats, I mean, they were strong in the middle, what I call the middle market, but they really had not gotten into the above, you know, what I would call a true mega yacht. So I think we're in that moment when it really is too early to tell. The global market is somewhere above 50 feet, but the market that we tend to focus on, people like you and me, is the larger you know, mega yachts. Things are also changing to you know, sailing. I think that the people on the ground, however, don't really don't seem to be too worried about it. It is just what it is, you know. I read an article recently, it was back from about a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, six extremely well-known people in our space, you would know all of them, things with about the future of yachting. It was for them, it was all about 3D printing, young owners getting into the market, the move to multi-hulls for a smoother ride, so to speak, safety and security, the cost of integrating glass into the designs of yachts, which I think maybe is viewed as a little bit more environmentally sensitive, perhaps. And then, and ultimately, the remote exploration, the fact that yachts can go now further and further. But none of that had to do with any concerns about the mergers and acquisition tear in the yacht world. It was all about just things that affected, you know, the market in terms of young ownership, or how do you build boats better, multi-hull for a better ride, better, stability, safety, right. Security. So it's an interesting thing because we will be affected by it. I can tell you the marketplace doesn't really understand it. I say that because I'm dealing with a very high net worth fellow who has a wonderful yacht, 200 feet, and he's at one of the three. He's been in, this will be his third yard, and he's very unhappy, a very unhappy yacht owner right now. But when I started talking to him about it, he talked about Monaco Marine, and I said, getting back to that for a moment, he did not understand that the three yards that he had been in were basically, each one were part of a 9-yard network. He had some idea that Monaco Marine was who he was holding to account. And he's going to be fine. I'm not sure there's anything new in the yacht world, but it had just irrelevant to his needs that they were in this Monaco Marine was this amalgam, this network of boatyards with varying ownership structure. He was more interested in the service. You know, how are they doing on project management, the logistics, the cost of services, the basics.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, that brings up a good point, and it certainly ties to my own experience through these mergers and acquisitions, too. It doesn't matter that it's media. I think at the end of the day, Company A acquiring Company B is largely the same when you look at the big picture, whether it's Marina, a magazine, a chain of grocery stores, what have you. The acquiring company acquires the other asset because they see something that they're doing really, really well, and they believe it's complementary to the other business holdings, mm-hmm. or they see something that they're missing a golden opportunity on. And that would be more so with a distressed company. That wouldn't be a company like the ones that we're talking about. That would be more of a, again, in my experience, something that's on the brink of bankruptcy or maybe had already filed bankruptcy. The acquiring company says, man, they just missed it completely. We could totally fix that. And mm-hmm. boy, we could mm-hmm. turn this thing profitable in no time. But when you're talking about companies that do certain things really well, or they do things acceptably by the new ownership's view, by and large, they don't interfere. They let you mm-hmm. continue to do what you do. That certainly happened with the magazine. Management came around and met with every single one of the magazine's editors and publishers and said, in the case of Power and Motor Yacht, you guys are making money. You're making a lot of money. You're very efficient in your spending. Of course, they wanted to see certain costs come down, as you can always understand a parent company wanting to cut certain costs. Mm-hmm. But when they were given a reasonable explanation as to why our travel and entertainment budget was so big, the expenditures were so large, they said, okay, we get it. You need to travel to see the boats. You can't just be keyboard warriors, so to speak, and continue onward. So in the case of all of these different companies, the marinas and the shipyards that have been bought, if they were doing what they were doing all along really, really well, or even adequately in the view of the new owners, they're not going to be changing anything anytime soon.
Right.
The only thing that they would start to change might be behind the scenes things in terms of contracts,
right.
streamlining some of those, maybe streamlining some of the other day-to-day paperwork processes. But when it comes to the customer experience, that really would not change until further down the road if something is broken, so to speak. A smart company is not going to mess with success. If they do start messing with success, then that word, I think, would circulate far earlier than anybody would, you know, than anybody would even see. Everybody would just know that from past experience or other people's past experience.
Right.
And they'd be running for the hills and say, ooh, I don't want to do this company. I don't think we're dealing with that in any of these situations. Not that, you know, I am not an expert at it, but I've not heard anything that would make you say, ooh, you know, maybe this isn't such a great marina to be at. Maybe this isn't such a great shipyard to be at. Maybe this isn't such a great brokerage company to deal with. It doesn't seem like their true day-to-day operations have changed.
Well, I mean, to your point, I think that historically, and I think that they might be amused at our musings and observations as two people on the ground in the yacht world, but go back to Ferretti Group, one of the first situations. You know, they kind of went through different iterations. They were then acquired by some Chinese interest, and I think I read recently they're going into a different situation now in a different marketplace. But all of these things, none of that really was of interest to me. This legendary name that is visually, or I guess with audibly Italian, suddenly is owned by the Chinese. Nothing really seemed to change. But if you thought about the vessels that were in that group, the builders in that group, like Bertram, like Pershing, Ariba, I don't know that that was really the necessarily good for those brands. Bertram has kind of diminished. I think it's fair to say, I don't know of any new Bertrams anytime recently. I went by their, by one of their facilities, and there was only one boat inside there. So it's not something that you can immediately point your finger to. You really have to ask yourself, do you see what's going on in terms of some benefit to the company itself that actually inures to the benefit of the customer? Now, one group that I've been kind of keeping my eye on, which is a very powerful group that seems to be producing astonishingly wonderful yachts, that it does not seem to be welcomed into the global, shall we say, family of yacht builders, is the Italian Sea Group. I'm just saying, because I deal with customers, I deal with clients, I deal with people that actually buy, that have the money and actually buy the things. And we had a client recently buy a yacht. Let's see, their group is, the one that I love is Prini Navi. They build fantastic sailboats. Their new boats are stunningly visually gorgeous. Now, have I been on one and, you know, gone below and tested it to the maximum extent? The answer is no. I haven't been invited. That's number one. And number two, but I've got a few clients now who are basically on my recommendation are checking out Prini Navi. They have legendary yachts with their name. They have new management. They have new leadership. But they also have something that is amazing, like the Admiral line they have, the Technomar vessels. They are beautiful, and they seem to be exceptionally well engineered. I had a client recently spend a ton of money at the Italian Sea Group for a large mega yacht, and he basically compared it to the Northern European yards and said, I can buy it for half the price of what I would have to pay if I went to one of the Northern European yards, the ones in the Netherlands or in Germany. And I went, wow, that's quite an amazing thing to say. He says, no, I've looked, I've shopped. I have people that do this for me, engineers. And he basically bought a yacht from the Italian Sea Group, and he loves them. It was an Admiral, which I don't really know much about that product. But he says, no, it was the entire thing was having to do with the quality of the product. I know that Picciotti has been around forever. They brought it back it's been around for a couple of hundred years. And they brought that brand back. I don't know that I've seen a Picciotti. I don't know about the NCA refit. I think Perini Nobby, just in terms of a family of wonderful yachts, the people they have in charge there, a young man named Vittorio Blinghini is just terrific. I mean, he's very responsive, and I know that my client has been totally happy dealing with him. So my point is that maybe there isn't one answer, and there isn't just one thing to be worried about. But the thing that the Italian Sea Group seems to be doing is combining their technologies in a surprising sort of amalgamation of new management know-how, technology, emphasis with these amazing Italian designs. Because the Italians, who knows, is it DNA? Is it historical? I don't know. Is it Michelangelo? Is it Da Vinci? I don't know. But these new designs are just shockingly beautiful in my mind. To my eyes, you know, I'm just a one guy down in Miami, but I don't know. I mean, on the one hand, you have the sales group. That's the Marine Maxes of the world. They're trying to sell things like Frasers and Northrop & Johnson. They're selling. But on the other hand, you also have this amazing thing in the building world. And some things have not done so well. Nova Screw comes to mind when, you know, they've been through some kind of rough patches. And the last time I checked, it seemed to me like they were kind of gobbling up things and growing and acquiring and spreading their wings. By the way, the name of the yacht that I couldn't think of the name of it was Kensho, K-E-N.
Oh, right, Kensho. Right. Mm-hmm.
Fantastic yacht, by any measure, in my view. Just styling is stunning. You know, it turns your head. You look at it and go, wow. Inside, right. It's even more wow. Mm-hmm. And then when you go into those groups, you go, well, you know, they're doing something right.
Yeah.
So I don't know. You got the building side, you've got the selling side, you got the management side. But I think there will be, inevitably, I think what it comes down to, the customer is the one that's going to speak loudest.
Right.
And I think the captains are the ones that actually are the decision makers to a great extent, the trusted captain's role in the society that we are, this international family that we're a part of, is a huge component of what we're dealing with here. And, you know, I get an earful that some captain's traveling north, how he makes the decision of where to go, you know, what port of call does he go into. It's not necessarily about a brand name, you know, it's about
right
services and so forth.
Right. I think all of this really comes down to understanding two things. It's understanding not just what the new ownership group can bring to the table, which goes beyond economic stability or economic growth. It's the mindset, how they're going to view the company, how they're going to view their other holdings in conjunction with it. But it's really understanding what their ultimate goal is, what the end game is. Mm-hmm. And this is pure conjecture. I want to make that clear. But for a sales company, the likes of a Marine Max, you could easily see them saying, well, okay, we have all these customers in the pipeline. They've got 40 footers. Mm-hmm. They've got 50 footers, 60 footers. Clearly, mm-hmm. having something like Northrop & Johnson and Frasier means they've got this great pipeline to continue growing those customers and giving them more services. Mm-hmm. And therefore, holding on to that customer for many, many more years.
Mm-hmm.
That's the ultimate end game for any company, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's really understanding what the thought process is and then saying, as the consumer sitting back, whether they're the captain or they're the captain with the owners. Okay, well, does that suit us? Does that mean it's going to impact mm-hmm. us either positively or negatively, and then make your decisions from there?
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I met and might be helpful in terms of the conversation of maybe the theme is there is no ready answers. You need to take each situation with a grain of salt. I was dealing with a fellow yesterday, and the idea was that he needs work done, substantial work done. And how do you select the yard? And basically, I noticed that every reference was to, you know, he wants to be near the work. So he wants to use a yard in Florida, south of, shall we say, Vero Beach, which would be South Florida. He says, I want to be near the work. I don't want to send it off to some distant location. I have to spend hours in a plane to get there from time to time. And he never once talked about any branding. He just simply referred to the yards as Merrill Stevens or LMC. He's still using that word. Or Rybovich, or even Rossioli came up. So that's on the ground. So it reminded me of a lawsuit that we had, and it's a maritime related thing, and it's kind of an acquisition related thing, because this hedge fund, and that's what you kind of have at the top of all of these mergers and acquisitions. There's a capital access to capital markets component, and they had acquired a cruise line, a small cruise line, and they wanted to acquire these two small cruise ships. They were owned by these Greek nationals, two gentlemen. They were partners. And they concluded, based on numbers analysis, that if they acquired these two ships, it'd be like acquiring a business. They did it entirely on the numbers. They acquired the two ships from these two Greek nationals that were the owners of the two ships. And then after they acquired them, they discovered they weren't very happy with their acquisition. And they wanted to blame somebody for their bad purchase. And they tried to blame an entity that's in the yacht world that's very, very significant in the yacht world in terms of management. They had hired this group to be the managers. And so we were hired to defend the yacht management group. And the thing that I could not get over, and you kind of wonder when you look at what's happening, is that there were no maritime documents in the deal.
Hmm.
They had acquired these two ships based on balance sheets and numbers almost entirely. What would become our client, there was no, there were no surveys. The classification documents had not been produced, had not been analyzed. The normal due diligence that we all know in terms of sea trials had not occurred. I thought it was some kind of mistake when I first got the file. I said, there's nothing in this that relates to the maritime world. And they said, well, we did it all on numbers, or they did it all on numbers. I said, did you offer to dry dock the two ships? Yes. What did they say? They didn't want to incur the expense. I went, oh, okay, well, there's your trouble. So the point is that it was the maritime world collided with a different world. It's a capital world, a market world, a money world. And it was a disastrous thing that they lost, just tons and tons and tons of money. Their stock went down. And, I'm not even sure what had ended up, because we won our case and the judge issued a fantastic opinion that went on for days. A 92-page opinion, but basically zipped the people that were complaining. Our client prevailed, we were happy to say. So anyway, that may be the lesson is kind of stay in your lane, consult with people that actually are in the world that you're in, continue. Don't be too quick to criticize. Do it old school, do your due diligence by the fact that you have new groups coming out. on the one hand, you may say, well, that's just amalgamation into some group, you know, in the use of the earlier reference, the Italian C group, but maybe you should check out their products because maybe they are, maybe they do have an answer. Mm-hmm. Maybe they do have a reason that they're going to make Admiral or Technomar a bigger brand in the yacht world. And while it goes through that process of, and maybe bringing back Picchiotti, there's going to be value there. They're going to be trying harder and they're not resting on their laurels. But because it's a positive thing, they've got something going and I don't really know how they're doing it per se, but I know the products that I've and the feedback I've gotten from clients has been very, very positive and that's what counts. So, and all these other groups, I noticed they still have their same brands. They haven't changed their fast flags. And they're all wonderful people and we know them in the industry. And so we'll see where that goes into the course. But anyway, those are my musings, Diane, for this segment.
No, fair enough. Fair enough. I agree. It's definitely, you know, you dot the I's and cross the T's, as my dad always says. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at it from you try to take emotion out of it, of course. You look at it from the reasonable standpoint. You analyze what's been going on and make a more educated decision versus the emotional decision.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, thought-provoking as always, Michael. Thanks for your time today.
A wonderful discussion, free-ranging. Hopefully we've solved some of the world's critical questions. Until next time.
Absolutely. Thanks, everybody, for listening. If you have a Yacht Law question that you would like us to address on an upcoming episode of the Yacht Law podcast, you can contact Michael or me. Whether you are a yacht owner, a crew member, a representative in the industry, or even someone seeking to learn more about the world of yachting, we are here to help you make better educated decisions. While we can also keep you anonymous, you don't need to be. Our contact information is in the show notes in each of our episodes, including this one. Until next time, I'm Diane Byrne. Michael, why don't you sign off?
Thank you very much, Diane. It was a pleasure as always, and great to look forward to our discussions. And until next time, have a good day.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Yacht Law Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to us for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, or your favorite podcasting service. Remember, the super yacht world can sometimes be complex, and the hiring of a lawyer is always an important decision. Should you need to retain one, the team at Moore & Company can send you complimentary written information about their qualifications and experience. Please visit the website moore-n-co.com.